Welcome to The Choice. This is episode 4, The Dog, The Cake, and You in Three Lessons. This is Kurt Doolittle. The first lesson, The Dog, The Cake, and You. I used to work in an art supply store back in college in an exclusive little city. There was a bakery next door. A woman parked in front of the store one day, and she went to the bakery. She came back, she put the cake on the front seat, closed the door, and went off to do something else. She came back. There was a large dog in the back seat. Its face was covered with frosting. The cake was a disaster, a total loss. She scolded the dog. She cried. She ran to the baker. She was angry and she wanted someone to blame. In this little parable, the cake is the government, economy, financial system, education, media, and culture, our institutions and information system. The dog is the people in the government, academy, media, and financial system. The woman is you. The box she didn't put the cake in is the law, and the trunk of the car is the militia. People are just animals, despite the 20th century pseudoscientific attempt to say that we're somehow different. Animals follow incentives. The law creates a market for the suppression of malincentives. The militia defends the law that creates the market for the suppression of malincentives. And such, the problem isn't the people in the government, the economy, the financial system, the education, the academy, and the media, because animals act as animals do. They follow incentives and eat the cake. The problem is your failure to preserve the militia, to use the militia to preserve the law that preserves the market for the suppression of malincentives, which in turn suppresses the malincentives of the people who are animals following their instincts. Conspiracy is your way of not taking responsibility for your civilization. You're asking the dog not to eat the cake instead of making sure that the dog can't eat the cake. It's up to those few men of ability to preserve our way of life. So man up, shut up, show up, and win. The second lesson, three examples, Eve's apple, Pandora's box, and the 19th Amendment. Is it the fault of the female, or is it the fault of the male, for not having created laws to equally suppress the female interpersonal and social superpredator as we did to suppress the male physical and military superpredator? One family, one vote was a compromise. In the absence of one family, one vote, we require houses for men and women, just as we required separate houses for aristocracy, nobility, industry, and family. Only with these houses can we create markets for commons as we create markets for consumption in the ordinary economy. The animal just follows its instincts. It's up for those few men of ability to domesticate the animals, who are always the few. So man up, shut up, show up, and win. The third lesson, a bit longer, harsh words on conspiracy. So let me tell you how the world works. People who need organizations are not those with power. People who need societies are not those with power. People who need religions are not those with power. People who need ideologies or philosophies are not those with power. People with power have lots of people around them, giving them power and asking them for the exercise of power or proxy for power in return. And everyone giving and getting and distributing power is working in his or her own self-interest. We have to govern, we have to conduct the rule of law, we have to conduct all of the markets for life with the people we have, not the people we wish we have. We have to organize this society by the fact that dogs eat cakes because it's in their interest to. The world is full of grown-ups with power. They have power because people give it to them, not because they intrinsically have it. They maintain power because people keep giving it to them. People in power are funnels for concentrating power in places where it can have an impact, just like the military concentrates forces to win a battle, or just like 100 people pass the bucket to concentrate their efforts in a division of labor. And those grown-ups, well, honestly, they're tediously boring, because by and large, they're engaged in little more than accounting, and using accounting as their nervous system, and occasionally investing in opportunities that take a long time to bring to fruition. And the business, financial, and government sector is just trying to make money by keeping people consuming, while the academic sector is sucking their phalli, and the military is seeking opportunities to scare people into giving them money for new toys. So here's what people in power do. They maintain their power economy that keeps them in power. When they meet outside their power economy, they talk on three levels at once, using trivial niceties to signal fitness for cooperation, sharing information about opportunities and risks using subtleties in order to obtain information that they can use or gain favor for on future opportunities by sharing what can be used by someone else. They identify opportunities for minor, cost-neutral changes that each can make that together would increase the gains of each. If I have the choice between six choices, one of them produces a collective gain, and by that collective gain we all benefit, then I'm going to choose that sixth choice instead of one of the other ones. Average people can't imagine how simple the world is, nor how tediously boring and empirical the people who run the world are, nor how much the grown-ups dumb stuff down so the ordinary folk keep working and buying and the hamster wheel continues on running. You live in a world of trivial posturing, most of us do, because everyone around us has no power or meaning. People with power have the opposite condition. They're soaking in power, soaking in meaning, and soaking in opportunity, and can only afford the mental time and effort to invest in the best opportunities for their limited attention. They don't have to signal or posture like people who have no power and meaning. In fact, their primary problem is keeping additional people away from them so that their opportunity to take advantage of the opportunities they have isn't further constrained. Well, do you know why this is? It's because resources to main power economies are always scarce, because power economies are always in competition, and that competition keeps the power price high. The reason you, or and most people, worry about what you do is because you feel out of control, and you want to use it to vent your frustration and justify your expression of rage. And you can tell yourselves all sorts of paranoid nonsense to convince yourself, these little stories, that you understand the world, but that's really all you're doing. What you aren't doing instead is what you should be, which is saying, why do I feel out of control? What's causing me to feel out of control? And how can we collectively correct it without making it even worse? On the opposite side, there are people in activism, media, academy, politics, religion, the state, and those that seek privileges from the state in order to violate reciprocity for one excuse or another. Well, that's the left. The left has no power itself, so it conspires to obtain power. That's what leftist means, conspire to obtain power by non-meritocratic, irreciprocal means. Well, conversely, what does the right mean? It means we conspire to deny people power so they are left only with reciprocity. That's the primary conflict. Those who seek irreciprocity because they have no means of merit by which to obtain power, and those on the right who wish to constrain people from exercising power so they are forced to pursue power by meritocratic means. So what's wrong with the world? The only thing wrong with the world at any given time is the organization of incentives in relation to the human capital, including knowledge, norms, culture, demographics, and institutions. Well, today at least, unless we want to go back to militarization, communism, serfdom, or slavery, money is how we incentivize people. Well, we learned late in the game that consumers are more rewarding and profitable than serfs and slaves, because they will happily run on the hamster wheel of their own volition. Law, on the other hand, is how we engineer the organization of incentives. War or violence is how we engineer the opportunity to use law to organize those incentives. Everything else is some sort of kindergarten game, and conspiracy kiddies don't get anywhere near the ridicule they deserve. It's not that conspiracies don't exist, it's that they're a distraction from taking responsibility for working together to fix what's wrong with the world, which is using the law to engineer the organization of incentives to suit this current circumstance, and the use of violence to engineer the opportunity to organize that law to organize the incentives. They, or the enemy in general, are following their instincts and programming, which we know because women use exactly the same technique via the state as the enemy uses usury. Instincts are not conspiracies. That doesn't mean there aren't conspirators. It means that our idiocy at spreading capitalism, democracy, and rule of law to the rest of the world is just as idiotic as they're spreading globalism and socialism, pseudoscience, and baiting into hazard and parasitic financialism around the world. The animal follows its instincts until trained otherwise by its betters. In general, every person with any power in this world is following obvious rational incentives. All the bad conspiracy stuff happens at the bottom and middle where people don't have power but want to use some kind of ridiculous cheat in order to get it. Most of us feel the need to join organizations of all kinds, whether in our minds, in social circumstances, in charities, in business, or in political, in order to obtain some sense of agency, control, and therefore sense of meaning to our lives. We want to feel cause and consequence. But that's all it is. The search for meaning exists because power distance is too great for us to have real meaning. And that is what I am and we are out to change. Limiting power distance restores meaning and eliminates the opportunity for the conduct of all sorts of instinctual evils. Reducing power distance puts the civil society back to work in its continuous self-defense by the use of volumes, the entire polity, as a means of prohibiting the obtaining and exercise of power by irreciprocal means. Scale is always bad because it always increases power distance and destroys civil society by eradicating its influence and therefore its meaning and therefore our meaning and therefore our collective happiness. Unfortunately, the enemy is a fan of scale because they feel instinctive satisfaction and security in the herd. So again, the animal just follows its instincts. It's up to those few of us men with ability to domesticate the animals, and we are always the few. So man up, shut up, show up, and win. The only reason our men feel out of control is the men in the mirror need to man up, shut up, show up, and win together. Because we either rule and rule well, or we are ruled by those who will rule but rule worse. This is Kurt Doolittle. Thank you very much.